really what you should do is you should praise Ashley Howard. He won yesterday. That was great. Unbelievable. A lot of notables came out to participate. Our next guest is one of them. Like the rest of us, he's going to have to wait one more day for the start of the Philly season. Our guy, Mr. Ruben Amar. Good morning, Rube.
Good morning, guys.
How are you, pal?
I am tremendous.
Good for you, man.
I'm great. I'm excited. How excited are you?
Well, it's a little bit of a bummer that we got the 24-hour delay.
I get it.
But
it increases the anticipation for me.
It does. We can get there.
Let's go.
You know what I equate it to, Ruben? I literally thought of this morning. You'll remember this. Not everyone will remember. I will say most people will not remember this. The start of the 08 season. Brad Lidge, very beginning of the year, not available due to injury.
Yeah, he had a knee issue, I think.
He had something.
Yeah.
So it's like you had to wait just a couple days, I think, a couple extra, I believe, to see Brad Lidge. And then Seltzer, when he got in there, was that a 48 for 48?
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
48
for
48. He did all right.
So
he did fine.
My point is we can survive in advance as a fan base with the 24-hour delay, although it is a bummer.
Wait,
I mean,
what about the wait we had for the World Series? That was like a two-day wait.
Well, yeah, that's a great point, Rube.
Some would say
that's a longer wait.
Some would say that was a 28-year wait. But
some would say that.
Good line.
All right, 215-592-9494. You know, Rube, we started the show today. First off, let me thank you for being there yesterday.
Oh, it was awesome.
Participating.
It was a tremendous event, man. It was really cool. And the reason why you did it is even cool.
Well, that's the key. It's about raising money. And I know Coaches vs. Cancer got a lot of money donated.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah.
So, and should get more.
Yeah, well, of course. And listen.
As always.
And we'll look to do that annually. But, yes, of course, we want to have as big association as we can with Coaches vs. Cancer and the fight against cancer as possible. So thank you to you and all the celebs that came out to hang.
I got nervous.
Well, really?
I got nervous. I haven't had those like butterfly nerves. Like
that's
I was competing against somebody.
Now remind me, who were you against?
I was Ashley Sullivan at first.
Yeah.
And
then you won or lost that?
Who I ended up winning that one.
And then lost
Ashlyn.
Ashlyn. Yeah. And you lost to Brazier.
Terrible. Because she's one of my coworkers. And Ashlyn's awesome. She's
very
tremendous.
Cool. Yep.
And then I lost to Brave.
That's terrible.
That is terrible.
Yeah, that is like really.
But
I love you,
like
Ruben. That's tough.
He went for 6 for 10. I'm a terrible basketball player. I mean, I'm just awful. Yeah. My shooting stroke is just. Horrendous.
John Brazier making the semifinals was definitely shocking than you almost
that
winning.
Was way, way more embarrassing than. I mean, I have to take that back to like CBP and go.
Yeah.
I got to hang my
It'll
head
never go away.
Who from the Phillies will give you the hardest time? Past player, current management, current manager, former manager, current player. Who will give you the hardest time that you lost to Brazier in a free throw contest?
John Brazier.
Yeah.
That's true.
Great
true.
Answer.
That is
good
the
answer.
Truest answer ever.
Good answer.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of answers, Ruben, let's get to the Philly season. So we started the show talking about, you know, there's so much to be enthusiastic about. One thing in particular that you hang your hat on with enthusiasm, but also on the other side of the ledger, one thing in particular that concerns you. Pick whichever side you want first. What do you got?
Well, I mean, starting pitching depth is number one.
On the positive side?
On the negative.
Whoa!
Side. No, no.
Oh, depth. I'm sorry, you said depth.
No. Our starting pitching rotation is probably one of the best in the game.
I gotcha.
And I think the D-backs did a nice job of picking up another one, and they did a very good job. But I think we have one of the best starting rotations in baseball, irregardless of the fact that they've lost Taijuan Walker. I really believe that the way our four guys who are healthy, the way they pitch and the emergence of Ranger Suarez,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's going to be, I think he's going to have like a super breakout year. I think it's going to take him to the next level.
He rang the bell last night at the Sixers game.
I loved it.
So
yeah.
When you mentioned depth in the starting rotation, I think in terms of who's the sixth, seventh, and eighth starting pitcher,
correct,
if need be. I mean, but don't other teams basically have Manny Moe and Jack 6, 7, and 8?
They all do. But, I mean, it always has to be a concern. Pitching's always the biggest issue and the biggest problem and also can be the best thing for your team. And I just think right now, the pitching depth is the thing that concerns me the most.
That's interesting. Even though there are young guys, you think they won't be ready if they had to step in August? The minor leaguers?
I think that they have the arms, and they also have a couple of veteran guys. Like David Buchanan could come in and give you some innings. It's just, you know, just like any other team, pitching depth's an issue.
I also look at it this way. I'll say this, though. Who also can come into the fray is Dave Dombrowski, the trader.
Oh, yeah. You
know, not traitor, trader. Like, last year he got Michael Layton.
Important spelling distinction there.
Very big difference between trader and traitor. I mean, I would expect if they run into a problem, we'll get a starter. Now, how good that starter is, obviously, that you know, can be a big difference.
Well, the biggest,
it's also dependent upon
who's available.
Who's available, and, you know, early in the season, it's hard to make trades. So you got to have to ride out the storm a little bit. But I think if Taijuan Walker comes back and is healthy and can be closer to where he was in the middle of the season last year, I mean, this is a really good staff.
What are the odds of that? Like,
I think he'll be back. I think I honestly
it's
think
shoulder. Yeah, growing shoulder.
A shoulder isn't a concern. That said, I do believe that it is more like a tendonitis thing than it is like a labrum thing. If it's a labrum thing, then that's a real issue.
Yeah, they got a big problem.
If it's not and it's tendonitis and he just needs to gain strength and get, you know, and it's just tenderness, then that's cool.
All right, let's crank up the phone lines here. Ruben with us for the next 3 hours. Again, a delay 1 day until the Phillies now will start tomorrow instead of today. Let's get to Dan in Philadelphia. Whoa.
Hey, guys, how are we today?
Dan,
what
that's,
was that?
It sounded a little bit like
a horn.
I thought the Flyers scored a goal.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right, what's going on?
There was a car flying by.
Oh, man.
That's how fast I thought you were going to get knocked out of the tournament yesterday. But Joe, you
can I just say that he was really impressive. I watched it. I watched him shoot, and I'm going, wow, is that really Joe DeCamera?
Well, thank you.
Dude, that was really good. I mean, I don't like to like praise you all that much usually.
I'll take it, but
I'll give you some love.
Yeah, Rube, I had to do that earlier too.
I gotta give you some love because he
deserves it. You got to keep it real, man.
Yes,
he had so many pressure shots. I couldn't believe how many pressure
shots. Well, especially for the 7 a.m. audience who might not have heard 9:40 and 45 and 9:50 and 9:55. I mean, I'll just say I'll take all the praise.
Oh my God.
Okay.
You're still lost, all right? You're still lost.
I take it all back.
See what you've done.
All right, Dan. I'm
sorry, definitely shocking. John, what I don't want you to do from now on is do the whistle and the screaming, because you know Joe holds on to anything he can when he does lose. Mm-hmm. So you've given him that ammunition in the future in case he does lose again.
He lost.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, but he could use that, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he like this fake shoulder injury. Joe, what did you hurt your shoulder doing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it just started. It started in the last week or two.
I don't know. It's a great.
I don't. I don't. It's just. It's a little.
He didn't do anything.
You know, I have wondered if it's the bag I carry. I don't know. I have a heavier bag this year than last year because I added. I have a new strategy for a calendar. And it's a big calendar. I don't know.
Calendar shoulder.
It's possible. I don't know, Dad. But
I may
have to see a doctor in the next week or two. I'm trying to.
No.
I might.
No, you won't. Listen, the competition's over. It's a mental thing. You need some type of injury to refer back to.
I'm just
do
not see a doctor.
I'm telling you.
Who was the guy who blew out his arm when he tried to tear a phone book? It was a like Steve Sparks or something.
Did he really?
He tried to tear a phone book. He thought he was strong enough to do it, and he like blew out his shoulder. And he like.
Oh, all right. Well, that's an acute injury.
Yeah.
Sure.
He knows how that happened. Yeah, he knows. It's how did you hurt your shoulder? I tried to tear a phone book apart.
I don't know, Dan. I mean,
Joe,
Dan, you're getting
ready to do a free throw shooting contest. Your shoulder starts hurting. You're getting ready to do fantasy camp. Your groin starts hurting.
Oh,
they're all related to what you're about to do, and the reasons you need an excuse.
Incorrect.
Your body is ahead of time, just being like, this is going to hurt.
The groin was after. Fantasy camp. It was during fantasy camp.
You're like a lot of athletes.
No, why didn't he get his ball running for you?
He's got the built-in excuse piece.
All right, Dan, give me an answer. Modern times, a reference to something old. What do you got?
How about the Apollo space mission being named after the Greek god Apollo?
You know, that's
a really good answer.
That's a really good
answer.
That's a great, great answer. We're going to get wonderful answers here today. 215-592-9494. Speaking of answers, we'll give you the answer next to how many wins the Phillies are projected to get this year. Plus the Braves total, the Dodgers total, some of the notables in baseball. Howard Eskin joins us at 8. The debacle, and I mean debacle, of the end of the 76ers game last night. What was said after the game by the Sixers brass, including James Harden's comments after the game. And Saquon with more commentary on the Jason Kelce show. We'll get to that and more. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie. It's 94 WIP.
Let's talk about my friends at Mount Holly Nissan. Tina Wright, the owner of Mount Holly Nissan, has a motto. Give the customers the right deal at the right price. Like right now, you can lease a new 24 Nissan Sentra for only $259 a month. It is a great deal. New Nissans are arriving daily, and they have a great selection of new and pre-owned Nissans to choose from. Minutes from all bridges, Mount Holly Nissan is the right dealership for you. Stop in or visit online at mthollynissan.com. Again, that is mthollynissan.com. For all lease deals, please see dealer for details.
All right, good morning to you on this Thursday morning where we have the delay. One more day to Phillies opening day. As James pointed out earlier, it is opening day in baseball, just not here because of the rain. We'll crank it up tomorrow with our opening day coverage, but a lot of discussion today as we look ahead to the Philly season. What's got you enthused? What's got you concerned? Again, when I think in terms of concern, I think in terms of what could bite them in the playoffs, because I feel exceedingly confident they'll make the playoffs. By the way, speaking of making the playoffs, Sixers obviously will get to the postseason. Whether you call it the play-in round, whether you call it to get to the 1-8 seed, time will tell. Last night's loss really hurt. You just heard what Rhea played in the update. Disastrous end of the game, not just the final 10 seconds, but the final minute, minute and a half. Just a flurry of bad calls. Clearly, Nick Nurse fired up, rightfully so, on the court as soon as the game ended. Call not going the Sixers' way. Number of calls not going the Sixers' way. Nick Nurse, he stormed at the refs. I mean, you know. He didn't.
He went at him.
He was aggressive.
Ruben, he didn't Pete Rose him and bump the guy. No. Remember Pete Rose bumped that? That was a disaster.
It looked like he was.
That was
trying
a 30-game suspension, I think.
To shout some things in their direction, get something across.
Oubre was like the best. Was
they were. Look, Oubre and Nick Nurse.
All right, so sprinkled in.
Let's listen to what Nick Nurse said after the game. So a few minutes later, obviously after he addresses the team, he's got to find a way to compose himself to some extent if he chooses to. Before taking to the podium. So he clearly doesn't go full throttle here, but he also doesn't back down that he thinks the refs messed up. Here's how Nick Nurse handled it in the post-game press conference.
You and Kelly were pretty frustrated with the officials at the end. What did you think of the way it was officiated in those final moments?
Well, I think, I think he took it in there pretty hard, right? I looked at it on the screen, on our computer a couple times. I thought there was certainly contact, certainly as much as with the last two or three that got called in, ones at the other end. And that's all. I just thought it was enough contact to call.
You know, Ruben, your perspective here on what a tough spot that is for Nick Nurse, I'm fascinated in. So you were a player who, calls go against you sometimes and it's not the right call. You were a GM where stuff goes against you and then, someone interviews you and say, what'd you think of that call? How do you handle that? Like, when you know the guy messed up, you also know commissioner's listening, and he'll find you. He'll find you big if you go hard. How hard is it for Nick Nurse to find a way in 15 minutes to get his head into, let me say something, but let me not get myself fined?
I mean, it took tremendous composure. You used it, because I would snap. So I would have to give myself the 24-hour rule.
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't like the decision that, like, a manager made, mm-hmm. or a pitching coach, or something that happened in a game, it was hard for me, or I had to call the commissioner about, an umpiring thing, which I did not do very often. I know a lot of GMs did that and complained about it, but I tried to give myself a little time to compose myself before I snapped.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of an emotional
fiery guy.
So,
I know you are.
So that was difficult for me, but I learned from Pat Gillick, man, sometimes you got to take a deep breath. And in that situation, when you're going to the podium, that showed a lot of composure because that was a disastrous call. It was egregious. It was terrible. And they missed it, and it probably cost them a game.
Well, here's where it really hurts. It's really impactful for their efforts to try to get to the sixth seed. Because, John, that's been the thing. Try to get to the sixth seed. Buys you more time with it. Look, I will be
Indy lost last night, too. They had a chance to gain a game.
There was a window there. And I'm telling you, I mean this. I started, literally just yesterday, I started getting excited about the Sixers again because it's now feeling real that Embiid will be back. Like, real. I mean, Woj just saying it.
Finally feel like it's real.
Well, I mean, they're finally saying it. Nick Nurse finally said it last night. I mean, he could have said it 3 weeks ago. He didn't. Joel could have said it 3 weeks ago. He didn't. Not my fault. I'm waiting for them to give me some
difficulty. What's the difficulty with jumping out there, especially with medical stuff? If it's not real,
because Ruben,
you say it's real,
right?
You're in trouble.
You are. But I will say this, Ruben: the whole town tuned out on the Sixers for 7 weeks, in part because a lot of people didn't believe he would come back or come back in time or come back in enough time to get in enough good shape.
Totally agree.
Like, they could have owned a different narrative if they wanted to. They chose not to, and everyone went nap on the Sixers for a month and
a half.
Well,
because if you put yourself out there and say, well, he's definitely coming back, and he doesn't, then you look like a clown.
How about he's likely coming back? Give me that. Seltzer, couldn't they? Because wouldn't you say they did not give us a he's likely coming back?
No, they didn't. Look, to Ruben's point, I understand the concept.
The worst case scenario for them is, hey, he's
coming back and he doesn't. Like, that is the worst possible thing. Especially, look, they don't know what's going to happen. They went 13-26 so far without Embiid. What if they went 3-whatever? You know what I mean? Like, they could be out of the playoffs at this point. Like, there's no reason for them to make a proclamation like that with someone like Embiid. Well, so I get it. I would have preferred that, but I'm not going to dig it.
All right, so here's my point, though. Yesterday, honestly, I start getting excited again, and then they lose that game that way, knowing that it really does jam them up, 7, 8, 9, 10, that whole playing thing. If you survive that, then you probably got to face either Boston or Milwaukee. I mean, that was a big loss last night. Let's go to the phones, 215-592-9494. Go ahead, John.
It was an awful loss. It felt disgusting, and it might hurt us to the point where we have to play in now. But that team, that group, Buddy Hield making, I mean, crazy three-pointers late in the game.
That was big.
Kelly Oubre. We had to lean into Kelly Oubre. Yeah, you know what? He didn't get the shot off in time at the end of the game. He didn't make some of the plays he needed to yesterday. But these players are figuring out a way to play better, elevate their own game to some degree. And when Joel comes back and plays his way, and there's going to be a point where he has to play his way into getting to be the best version of Joel.
Yeah.
But when these guys are all a better version of themselves, and then Joel finally back and healthy can play the way he needs to play, I don't think you can underestimate, like, anything's on the board. This team could be special, but we don't know what it's going
to
look
like. I tend to think you're wrong.
It's got a high ceiling.
We'll say. By the way, Ruben, do you agree what Sixers really need? Once Joel comes back, stick in the hammer. Corner three. I mean, come on. With what you saw yesterday. I mean, come on. Let's go to the phone.
Designated free throw shooter, maybe. Yeah. I'll go with that.
Just come in for the free throws. That's it. Shut it down.
Let's go to Ed in Phoenixville. What's going on, Ed?
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Good, buddy.
So I had a question for Ruben and then a kind of a point. So is it pretty much set that Kyle Schwarber will be hitting leadoff?
Yes.
Opening day?
Yes, it is. Okay. And I don't have any problem with it at all. I would do it,
either.
But I don't have a problem with it. I'm glad I'm not the manager.
I mean, I think some of the proponents of it, like some people confuse correlation with causation. I think there's other factors which cause them to win when he's hitting leadoff.
I agree.
Assuming that's going to happen, I think Brandon Marsh should hit ninth. Reason being is, you know, he had an on-base percentage of like 370, 380 last year. You want somebody on base when Schwarber comes up the second time. What do you think about that?
That's a great point, and I totally understand it because it's not like he's going to get a lot more at-bats because he's hitting eighth instead of ninth. It does make a very good point. Maybe it's something that Topper would consider. It's a good point.
I mean, it's really hamstringing them that, you know, if Turner or Stott had better plate discipline, they would hit them lead off, but they just don't walk enough.
You know, Ed, the question I have is, should you slide him into the 7 hole and have Castellanos hit 8? And that's a little bit of a slap on the face to Castellanos, but that would be a difference maker because he would get an extra at bat in the 7 hole than he would in like the 8 or 9,
you know,
I think.
Ed, honest to God, I know people rip Sounds analytics. Great. Some people, I think it's in proper use, got tremendous use in sports. It really is one of those things where you need some kind of mathematician to do a deep dive on what's the best way to construct the lineup. Like, without the pitcher there, there really is something to be said for have a better hitter hit 9 instead of 8. Because he's closer in the batting order to 1, 2, and 3. I don't know what the right answer is. I just know that the old methodology of let's have the best hitter hit the most often, like 8th instead of 9th, might not be the right approach because 1, 2, and 3 follow 9 more than, you know, follow 8.
It was one of the reasons why Tony La Russa flip-flopped his pitcher and the 8-hole hitter.
But that was very unusual.
Very unusual, but he did it.
He did it.
And he did it because I think And people said, well, you know, because the guy who's hitting eighth is a worse hitter than the pitcher. That's not necessarily the truth. I think it was because he wanted somebody better before the one hole.
Totally. Ed, give me a big answer. You can win the Phillies ticket. It's a reference to something old in modern times.
One of the funniest movies of all time. How about History of the World, Part 1?
You got
That's
it, man.
A really good answer.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, the whole movie, essentially, yeah.
All right, let's go to Malik in Mount Airy. Hi, Malik.
Good morning. Listen, I watched the game, and all I'm going to say, it was just bad call after bad call. I looked at Russell Westbrook pushing Mo Bamba out the way for a rebound. Nothing's called. The play before the last play where Kelly Oubre went baseline, and you're not going to tell me that he has two hands on the ball. And Kawhi Leonard, you can clearly see their body to body. He's pushing them towards the basket, and the ball gets stuck. Nothing's called. Yet, on the other end,
yep. Yeah,
I'm not saying he didn't make – I mean, those two layups were out of this world. Yeah. But if you're calling those calls where it's ticky-tack,
mm-hmm. Yet
you're not calling – where I'm body-to-body with you, there's a difference between if there's air between us. If I'm body-to-body with you and blocking your shot, kind of says I got an advantage because I can put my body weight on you to stop you from getting the air.
Malik, they were disastrous calls. All credit to Kawhi for making those incredible shots, but they should not have included an extra free throw. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous. And that's why then you take it to the Oubre play at the end. And again, I think it's a little bit 50-50-ish whether Oubre was fouled. But if Kawhi's fouled, then Oubre's fouled.
That's the point.
And my thing is, if like they say, you're supposed to be calling it down the middle, right?
Yes.
So if it's down the middle, if I get a ticky-tack on one end,
yep.
Like they say, sometimes when a referee makes where was our makeup call?
Yeah.
Right. Because you can clearly see I'm backing away from Kawhi. You still call to foul me. Okay, I take that. But give it back to me. Now, I got a question for Rube. Do you think the back end of our bullpen will be strong enough, our starting bullpen will be strong enough for us to, like, make a late playoff run? I kind of figure we're going to get there. But with, like, Taiwan, right now he's a little iffy, and our fourth, fifth starter is a little iffy. Do you think they're going to get stronger throughout the year for us to make a late run into the, like, NLCS? First and World Series.
All right, Malik, before he answers that, you give me an answer here to a reference to something old in modern times. What do you got?
All right. I'm going to reference the original Fab Five. This person's name is the same name of our starting quarterback, Jalen Rose.
I'm confused. What's old
pre-1900.
About it? Pre-1900. Oh, he's gone. That's all right.
That's all right.
I think he was talking about the back end of the rotation, right?
No, I think what he was trying. Oh, I'm sorry. With the answer, yeah.
Go ahead.
I think he was talking about the back end of the rotation, and I think it's going to be fine. I really do. And that's sort of the least of my concerns. It's almost like people, you know, worrying about, you know, whether Johan Rojas is going to hit over 200. I'm not worried about Johan Rojas because he is going to hit over 200 with his glove. I mean, that's my feeling on it.
Well, okay. Well, let me ask you this question, Ruben. How low is too low?
I don't know. The guy hit 300 yet last year.
Well, no, I know, but let's just listen. Maybe he hits 300. Maybe it's 250. Maybe he hits 180. We'll say.
He just needs to.
What is too low to justify playing a player regularly with a great glove in center field? Is it 220? Is it 200? Is it 180? What's the number?
It's probably 220, 215 in this day and age. And to me, it's not necessarily the number. It's the quality of the at-bats. If he's getting embarrassed every single game for, like, the first 3 weeks of the season or 4 weeks of the season, then I got to consider sending him down and making an adjustment. Otherwise, I mean, just let him fly, man. Just let him fly. He might be able to hit 220 or 230 on his legs alone.
Well, I will say this. One thing that buoys me on the decision to keep Rojas, like that word, John, buoy, is that
1-0.
You're going to make the playoffs anyway. See, I view it a little bit like the Bryson Stott thing 2 years ago. If you remember, Stott struggled a big time in the early months when he was at the big league level. But he worked through it, he got better, and they made the playoffs. Now, they barely made the playoffs that year, but they made the playoffs. And you had the player develop at the big league level. This year, to me, it's a more certainty. I might not be the right word, but it's a lot more of a likelihood that he make the playoffs. So I agree with you, Ruben. If he's looking feeble up there, embarrassed, to use the word you said, then at a certain point, almost for his own good, get him out.
Correct.
But if he's sitting, 227, you can muddle through it.
Absolutely.
If you feel like 2 months later, he's going to be a better hitter.
The first seven guys on that,
because you're gonna make the playoffs anyway. Yeah, is my point.
Yeah, but you're getting your production from the first seven guys. Their depth in their lineup should be excellent, and it should be one of the best. It is one of the best top six lineups in baseball. The guys at the top of that lineup are the ones that need to produce. If they're not producing, then you're in trouble. You're relying on Johan Rojas to produce. That's just not how it works. It's not how it works.
All right, 215-592-9494. Speaking of things to be excited about and looking forward to, Saquon obviously on the Eagles. And you know, he talked to Jason and Travis Kelce on their podcast. And he, you know, this is good stuff here. Saquon talking about Brandon Graham. When Saquon was obviously a competitor against Brandon Graham, Saquon then a Giant, Brandon Graham obviously always an Eagle, now joining Brandon Graham in the Eagles. This is a good Saquon story. And a good perspective as he looks forward to the coming season. Here's what Saquon said.
VG, we played him divisional playoffs, and, like, he's going crazy. Like, he's going ham at Dex, which, like, he don't even got a block Dex. Like, you had a block Dex.
Yeah, he's messing my day up. I'm like, bro, will you calm down, VG?
We had the coin toss, and he just boom, boom, boom. And I'm just like, and, like, that fired me up. So, like, I can see it now, like, how it's going to be a dope experience and cool to be a part of that side with him. Because, yeah, like, I remember at that coin toss, like, you already knew what it was. It's Phillies, New York. It's a divisional playoffs.
Yeah.
And then, like, it was, like, you know, that little standoff moment we all get. And, like, he's out there just yapping. And it's, like, for me, I'm, like, that, like, got me going. I'm ready to go. So, it's, like, I only can imagine being on the same side as him now.
Oh, yeah.
Him, all those guys. I can't wait. I honestly can't wait.
I love it, man. I mean, that very end thing. I can't wait. I honestly can't wait. You know? And then knowing, you know, it's good. It's good story. It's BGB and BG. Saquon joins it.
It's amazing when you think about it. Saquon is, I guarantee, a huge football fan. He grew up watching football, loves football.
Unlike Danny Watkins. Let me just put that out there. Canadian fireman, who I swear to God, when I met him, he wanted to talk only about the Flyers and the NHL to me. It was the damn weirdest thing
I've
ever.
He's from Canada, right?
He's from Canada.
Yeah.
He's from Canada. And I'll just say this story as point of reference. Look, you don't have to know who people are in order to block hard and tackle hard and that stuff. But we were at a restaurant doing a show. Jerry Rice and Steve Young were on the screen. And I said, hey, that's cool to see those two guys back together, because Steve Young worked at ESPN and Jerry Rice was doing a sit-in. And he said, who are they?
Oh, my God.
No,
I said, what do you mean?
No.
And he went to college in California.
He went to Baylor. Yeah.
And I go, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you just said it's cool seeing those two guys together. Who are they? And I said, well, that's Steve Young and Jerry Rice. So, all right, John, back to your point. Some people love sports growing up or love football growing up. They play football. Some people don't.
Saquon.
I couldn't believe it.
That was his first love, though. I mean, hockey's got to be his first love.
I get it, but I do think
I don't want that guy.
I think there were multiple loves ahead of football for Danny Watkins' point. Yeah.
I want my guy loving it. I need him loving it. Saquon loves it. You know, I got to be that guy in the huddle with Jerry Rice. When I showed up for camp and Jerry Rice is in my huddle, that made me want to work harder.
Oh, you didn't say who's that guy when you got in huddle with him?
I need to be the best version.
What's happening with the young players? They don't know the history. A lot of them don't.
Well, a lot of them do, though.
But a lot of them do.
A lot of them do.
Saquon.
A lot of them
do. You know, Ruben, a lot of these guys grow up on Madden, and you got the players at your disposal in your hands with a video screen.
They should know them.
Look, the NFL ratings are monster. I tend to think a lot of the players probably revere a lot of the dudes they grow up watching. I mean, I keep saying Tiki. Saquon talks about, you know, his love of the running backs through the years, and I don't know. I mean, I'm sure
they should, and that's one of the things we did with the Phillies. We went through, like, the history lesson of what our organization was like, just to teach them. Hey, remember this? There was a guy named Mike Schmidt,
right?
And Steve Carlton. That's why we, you know, named those, you know, those fields.
You skipped over 1920 to 1948, though, right?
Ashburn and all that.
Chuck Klein, buddy, Chuck Klein.
It is, you know, Ruben, a couple facts about the Phillies that are amazing. 90 on the bad side. 97 years to win a World Series. One World Series game victory in the first 97 years. I mean, like, it was a wasteland of disastrousness.
Let's stay in the present. Can we stay in the present?
Yes. Well, here I'll say this. You ready for this? Right now, we are in the early part of the middle of the third great era of Phillies history.
I was seeing the same thing.
Yeah. We're in year three of what could be a
late 70s, 80s, seven-year
run. Late 70s, 80s.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Your, 7-11.
Your group.
Our era.
Yep. Howard Utley. Yep. I mean, Howard Utley, Rollins, you know, Charlie, Jimmy, all those guys.
I agree.
And right now, group number three.
So we're looking at the centuries, and we break them up. These last 25, 30 years have been pretty darn good.
That's right. And by the way, no offense to the 50 Phils. Like, I get it, but it was only one time making the postseason. These are groups that are making it a lot. Granted, baseball expanded the playoffs, and that's a big dynamic. Let's get to Elliot right now. Elliot, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
What's up, Elliot?
Just a couple callers ago, we hear yet another person, you know, talking about Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot, and it's kind of amazing to me at this point we're still talking about this. But one of the points that I don't hear brought up very often is if I'm a starting pitcher in the major leagues and I'm facing the first batter, in the ideal world, I want to be able to throw my fastball. But if Kyle Schwarber is the first guy up, you're going to think twice about grooving in a fastball. If you have Turner up there or somebody else, you'd be much more likely to throw that fastball. So not only does this pitcher get taken out of his comfort zone, but the batter behind Kyle Schwarber gets to see his breaking stuff a lot more often than he would.
Maybe. Great point. One of the things it does very, very well is relays. I mean, he sees pitches. He sees a lot of pitches.
I'm going to ask Ruben to tell me if I'm flat wrong on this, because I have a theory on the Schwarber thing, and maybe I'm a bozo on this. But, Elliot, my point is very different than yours. If I'm a pitcher facing Kyle Schwarber, I'm doing everything I can to throw only strikes, which will primarily include me throwing a fastball to make that happen, because I know he will never, ever swing at a ball. Like, Ruben, part of what amazes me about him walking so much is why don't they actually throw him more? I know they're afraid he hit a homer, but, like, he'll just take the walk. So why not challenge him? Because otherwise he'll walk. I never see the guy. He's like Bonds. I mean, I'm not going crazy here, but he has a spectacular eye to never swing at a ball. So why throw him anything but a strike?
Well, because pitchers don't pitch anymore.
Well, that's stupid.
Pitchers don't pitch, and that's part of the issue is why they can't get past five innings or four and a third or whatever the case may be. They don't throw strikes because they're worried about the barrel. They're worried about getting hit.
And Elliot, I think that's stupid. Is my point because.
That's how the game is today. That's how it is. I think the fact that Ellie made a very good point. There's a lot of stress. I mean, the last thing that guy wants to do is throw a pitch and be down 1-0.
Yeah.
But again, Elliot, I'll say for the 5 millionth time, there's Trey Turner already got on base. You throw a pitch to Kyle Schwarber that's the wrong pitch, and now you're down 2-0. So I mean, we can go round and round in a circle forever on this one.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I still think that if you're Trey Turner, you have a better chance of getting a hit, seeing all those pitches thrown to Kyle Schwarber before you come up.
No, I get it. I mean, listen, Schwarber looks at a lot of pitches. I mean, he's got a Lenny Dykstra kind of thing there. I mean, Lenny set the tables for the Phils in that regard. Schwarber does it too. Elliot, give me a great answer, a reference to something really old but said in modern times in any capacity.
All right. I think most people in the Delaware Valley probably don't realize this, but the Phils are going to start their season tomorrow. We've adopted this mantra, Red October, which is a reference to the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. That's where we get that term from, the Red October Revolution.
All right, here's the only problem.
There's a problem, yeah.
It's a good answer, but we said at the beginning of the show it's got to be pre-1900.
Yep.
Russian Revolution, I believe, 1917.
Correct.
Pulling the Russians out of World War One.
Lenin. The other Lenin.
Yeah, the other Lenin. That's right. All right, I got answers in front of me here for win totals for some of the teams that we either, well, there's one team we love in baseball, and then the other teams we keep our eye on as it relates to the Fightin' Phils. All right, so win total for the Phils, I will say, and as the season is about to begin for Major League Baseball today, but for the Phillies tomorrow, unfortunately, because of the postponement of today's game till tomorrow. All right, John, I found this number, I'm going to be honest, I found it a little low, maybe even a lot low. Phillies win total over under when the season's just about to begin, 89
and
a half.
Yeah, I can't
get
over that.
Half less than last year.
It's crazy that it's so low.
I do, too.
Yeah, that it's lower than last year. I think this is a better team than last year's team, and doesn't make sense to me.
Here's the other thing that doesn't make sense to me. Started at 90 and a half, went to 89 and a half. Now, is that Taijuan Walker?
Well, people bet. It's what people bet is the point. People were betting the under.
All right, let's
point.
Tackle that topic. James, why do you think people nationally, because these are based on national, you know, stuff that comes in, why would the number nationally, James, two different questions. One, go down in the last month or so by a game, and two, currently be less than what they won last year when they had about as bad a start as a good team.
Well, and they also think they should have won like 92 or 93. If you remember, they lost a bunch of games at the end of the season last year where it just kind of didn't matter. But I honestly, I don't have a good reason. It's one of the I do an MLB over-unders pod with Elliot, and it's one of the ones that shocked me the most. Like, I can't believe how low that number is. And the reason people are betting it under, look, they won 89 two years ago. They won 90 last year. You know, they are right around that number. They are in a tougher division. That's probably why people are betting it down. But I think it's crazy.
Ruben,
I think it's a stone cold over.
Does it feel low to you?
It feels low. I'm definitely over the 90 mark. Definitely over the 90 mark. I'm probably in a 93 to 94 range.
That's where I am. All right, let's get to the other teams that we keep our eye on. All right. So we know the Braves have smoked the Phils 2 years in a row in the regular season, and then the Phils flipped the script in the postseason. But as it relates to the regular season, John, I got the Braves number. They've been 101 and 104 the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think their number is this year?
98.
No.
James, do you know the number?
I know what it is.
No, you don't get to guess.
I don't know. I'm not 100%.
I think they're saying 96.
Rhea, what do you got?
93.
It's 101 and a half, I think, right?
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you. That's James, a really good,
James
it's a really good
he
team.
Had the answer beforehand. Then he acts like
I said I thought I knew it, but I wasn't 100%. That's why I waited for you.
You're kind of trying to get credit for something.
I thought I knew it.
You said a lot. The audience knows what they heard. All right.
And Jeff, the thing is, they're a lot closer, I think, than people think.
I do, too.
If you remember last year, so the Phillies get off to the terrible start, right? After June 2nd, they go on a 100-win pace. They're 65-40. The only ones who are actually better than
were the Braves.
Yeah. Exactly. but I think that I think it could be a real close battle. I think
I do
it could be
too.
A fun battle.
I agree with that.
I would bet under on the 101.5.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, one of the main things I'm looking forward to the Philly season is what I think is going to be a very compelling division race. And I know you don't have to win the division to make the playoffs. But I think the Phillies, one, can win the division. I think they probably won't, but can. And two, I think the Phillies are going to push hard. They're going to strive to get it. Now, look, you can make the case. Maybe they feel there's a game in August and there's a stretch in August. Hey, let's sit out a game or two. Let's de-throttle. My hand got banged up. The ball hit it. May take some time off. We're going to make the playoffs anyway. We can win in the first round, blah, blah, blah. And maybe they have that mentality. But what I'm hearing from the guys that have been talking is, we really want to prioritize winning the division. We really want to push for it. And I think that could make for an incredibly compelling division race right on down to the end of September. So here's the deal, the rest of the division. I mean, forget the Nationals. It doesn't even matter. Braves 101.5, Phillies 89.5, Mets 80.5, Marlins 77.5, and then the Nationals way down there. All right, I also have the Dodgers total. Because we keep our eye on them. I mean, they're a major, obviously, threat for the Phillies when it comes to the postseason. They haven't squared off in the postseason since, you know, the era of 08 and 09. I think it was back-to-back years, and then obviously back in the 70s. But, Ruben, I have the Dodgers number. Remember, Braves were 101.5. What do you think the Dodgers number is?
Probably about 96.
No.
Probably exactly. 103.5.
Yeah.
That's a terrible number.
I believe it actually went down.
I take the under, and I'm going to take the under. You want to know why?
Yeah.
Because the Arizona Diamondbacks might win that division.
Wow.
Wow.
I think that team, honestly, I think Mike Hazen, their GM or president of baseball ops, whatever he's called, he's done a heck of a job over there because he's added two really, really good left-handed pitchers to a, you know, top two, I mean, Gallen. I mean, you start talking about their rotation now with Montgomery and
Eduardo Rodriguez. He's hurt, though.
Eduardo,
he's out.
He'll be back, but that's pretty darn good, man.
All right, let's go to the phones. As we get really close now to the start of the season, unfortunately it's not today. If you're headed down to the ballpark right now for some early tailgating, turn around. Today's game postponed. It'll happen tomorrow. Unless you want to go to the parking lot for like a 40-hour tailgate.
Go hang out.
And then go give it a shot. Just make sure you got a lot of food and a lot of drinks.
It'll be wet.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's get to Ryan right now. Ryan, good morning.
Yeah, hey, Joe. I'm calling you from Poland.
Wow, wow.
Couple of comments yesterday. So I was listening to your basketball thing. So I'm going to include my answer in a little bit of a story on your basketball yesterday.
Okay.
So first of all, in 1697, just so you don't say it's before, after 1900,
sure.
Charles Perrault wrote Cinderella. The most famous, well, we're in an NCAA tournament, and the most famous Cinderella story in basketball is Georgetown. Well, you and your Caesar analogies, you crossed the Romulus, you went to the pavilion, you went Vinny Vici Vici on Mark Jensen, you quote-unquote Caesar.
I went Caesar on his ass!
Harold Jensen, not Mark Jensen.
Harold Jensen, yep, yes, yep. Sorry, Harold Jensen.
Yep.
Now, your sidekick there, Mark Anthony, was all in your favor, he was rooting you on and everything, but your other partner, so to say, he was doing everything in his power to have you miss a shot. Whistling, screaming, he was your Brutus. And you gotta watch
wow. John Ritchie is Brutus.
Well,
John Ritchie was your Brutus yesterday. So my answer is Cinderella.
Cinderella's a good answer.
One point I'm getting.
By the way, I just little point of clarification. Yep. I know what you meant, but you referred to Georgetown as the ultimate Cinderella. I believe you meant to say Villanova.
Yeah. I mean, Nova over Georgetown.
Of course.
Nova over Georgetown.
Just clarify.
Nova over Georgetown.
I know what you meant.
Nova over Georgetown. Of course. Yeah, yep. The 85. And it was at the – and then obviously went to the pavilion yesterday. And,
yeah.
And hopefully you understand the analogy crossing the
line. We do. We get it all.
So as I was driving back from Germany yesterday to Poland, I found out my basketball team, we actually lost our game that night due to poor free throw shooting. And I'm here in Warsaw today. Just had lunch with the – main owner, I'm a minority owner, and we will offer you a 10-day contract. We need a high-powered, clutch, free-throw shooting player for the playoffs.
Listen, Ryan, that's very intriguing.
You can look it up. Zicky Warsaw, Z-Z-I-K-I, which means wild boars.
What kind of dough you offering?
Well, 10-day contract.
Look at you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give the numbers out, but it's substantial.
All right, have your guy talk to my guy, and then we'll see. If we'll be friends.
So how is he going to get away with only shooting free throws and not playing basketball?
We need a game manager. I know Joe can dribble. He was a point guard in his day. He can game manage.
Floor general, by the way. Floor general.
Andre Turner, the little general.
Well, I was thinking Sherman Douglas, the general, but it's all good. Ryan, give me an answer. A reference to something old and modern. Cinderella. Good answer. Good call. Let's get to some answers related to Joel Embiid. Because there were three different things that happened with the Sixers yesterday. Three totally different things. There was the play-in of a Sixers-Clippers game in which a lot of us feel the Sixers got jobbed. There was the return of James Harden and everything that represented. And then there was the Joel Embiid news. Let's get to the Embiid part of this. Let's start with Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse talked before the game. He was asked if Joel will play before the playoffs. Clearly, the most encouraging thing we had heard to date at that point on Joel's, you know, it sounds like he's definitely coming back.
I think there's a very good likelihood that he will return before the play-in, playoff. Yeah.
Nick, what are some of the things, what is he able to do right now on the court?
Well, he's out there working, right? He's out there working. He's doing lots of skill work and things like that and just trying to continue to advance all that stuff. Yeah.
No scrimmaging or anything like that with low minute guys, or G League guys or anything like that.
Yeah, he's on the court, so we'll let you know when we get to those stages.
All right, so I use the word, you know, definitely coming back. Nothing Nick Nurse says speaks to definitely, but I will tell you this. What Adrian Wojnarowski said on ESPN a short time after that really moves the ball forward much closer to the end zone. Because Woj obviously has some inside scoop. He references what Nick Nurse said, but knows more. Here's what Adrian Wojnarowski then said.
Sixers coach Nick Nurse said tonight that there's a lot of optimism that Joel Embiid will be back before the end of the regular season. And I'm told it is not a question of if, but when. And the belief is with 9 regular season games left after tonight against the Clippers, that Joel Embiid can be back for a handful of those before the playoffs, whether that's the play-in, whether the Sixers can move up a couple spots in the standings and get out of that play-in. Right now, they're tied in that 7-8 spot. But there's a lot of optimism right now around Joel Embiid I'm told that he is moving well. He has looked good on the court. And again, just a matter of when he makes his return at this point, not if. And the Sixers expect they can get a few games under his belt before they have to start playing playoff games or play-in games.
Clearly. Clearly, that is the most encouraging thing we have heard to date related to Joel. So let's actually tee up today's Twitter poll question of the day.
Twitter poll question of the day, sponsored by Armin Chevrolet. Minor fender bender or major accident? Armin Chevrolet's Collision Center will make it right. Certified service, ArminChevy.com.
All right, today's question. Are you starting to get excited for the Sixers, knowing that Embiid will likely play again this season? A yes, B no. You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. John, I don't have to ask you because I know you've been there the whole time.
Very excited.
Yeah, I am also getting excited. Look, I don't have high expectations, but I want to see the big guy do big guy things and see what's possible. I don't expect it to last too long, but I know this. Without him, they have no shot. With him, they have some shot. Let's go to the phones. Let's get to Ken and Cinnamon. Howard Eskin joins us shortly. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, friends. How are you today?
Doing great, Ken.
Joe, I have to give you credit, man. I was there yesterday, and I was hoping to have ample opportunity to mock you today. And there's nothing mockable there.
That's
like
funny.
You acquitted yourself very well, and just I don't know if you've gone through this, but adding up the math of all of the free throws you shot through all the rounds, you were over 85%, which would have won you your bet last year and would have saved you the
That's a good point. Well, thank you. What were the totals? Do you know it?
Well, you were 18 for 20, and I don't want to be like a Joe Cammer savant here, but yeah. I just was actually paying attention.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, go ahead.
You were 18 for 20 in the final against Ashley Howard. You were 2 for 3 in the overtime.
Yep.
You were 8 for 10 against N'Kobe. And you only had to shoot like 2.
I think it was two or three against Brazier,
Eight of 10 also against Harold Jensen. And then I believe it was 2 of 2 against Jensen to advance.
Correct.
Or maybe 2 of 3.
I think it was 2 of 2. I can't remember, to be
honest. And then also the 18 of 20 in the finals. Then you got to add a 2 of 3 in the overtime.
Yeah.
And Ken, this would be the overtime before they then changed the rules and somehow took a free throw shooting contest and made it a 3-point contest. You notice that? And you notice I had no – I mean, we were live on the air, and all of a sudden we got different rules. Listen, there's 3 winners yesterday. There's Ashley Howard, who won it. There's the Hammer, who, you know, let's be real, got jawed by having to move back to the 3-point line. And then there's Pat Carroll, who went 23 of 23 from the free throw line, and then he had to go back to the 3-point line. I declare 3 winners.
Okay.
Thank you. And by the way, I'll say that to Ashley Howard when he joins us coming up at 8:40.
Well, it does have to end sometime. So, you know, there's another show after you.
I'm playing around. I know, Ken. Yeah. All right, Ken, what do you got what do you got on the Phils, man? Thanks for being there, by the way.
Hopefully you raised a lot of money for coaches versus cancer. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you to everyone who donated. I know a lot of our listeners donated. And thank you to all the celebs that came out and participated either as shooters or just hanging around and meeting a lot of people. And to everyone who showed up. Crowd-wise, you know, WIP listeners, we thank you. And biggest thanks to the wonderful people from Coaches Versus Cancer and the year-round work they do for the fight against cancer. They do magnificent stuff.
So, listen, to me, this is basic math. I mean, you know, we've talked about the 15 wins a month average to get you to 90 and then how you push it past that. I think the Phillies won 10 games in May last year. If assuming they don't get off to that similar kind of really bad start where they were 7 or 8 games under 500 by the time they turned it around, you're looking at a 95 to 96 win team. and that's what I think this team is. I think they're at least a 95 to 96.
I will say this, Ken. They've had pretty good luck of not having too many injuries in recent years. Now, Bryce was notable, obviously. But, like, Wheeler and Nola have been pretty freaking locked in. You know, like, I would put it this way. More likely that they're more injured than less injured.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Wheeler and Nola.
Schwarber
are
Wheeler and Nola? He's talking about the Phillies as a team.
Yeah.
They've been remarkably healthier
as the season's rolled on, which has also helped them because in a lot of ways that's what you win it by attrition.
Right. Wheeler had the one stretch of like 4 weeks where they shut him down. But for the most part, I mean, I don't think Schwarber's been hurt. I don't think Castellanos has been hurt. I don't think Stott's been hurt. I don't think Bohm's been hurt. I mean, stuff could go awry there. All right, Ken, give me an answer. For the Phillies take, it's a reference to something old in modern times.
Well, John used a phrase yesterday talking about, which I happened to notice, talking about the defensive assignments. He said, mind your P's and Q's. And that actually goes back to English pubs in the 1800s when they were getting ready to close, would tell everybody to mind their pints and quarts, and then they shortened it to P's and Q's.
Cool answer, Ken.
That is a cool answer.
Didn't know it. I like it.